It is time for the Positive Chats podcast, and joining us this morning from Colorado is Dr. Jeff Myers. His book, Truth Changes Everything, How People of Faith Can Transform the World in Times of Crisis. And Dr. Myers, welcome to the Positive Chats podcast.
Hey, thanks, Tommy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us. And boy, this is one of the two. I mentioned to you before, I'm a pastor in addition to, you know, being on the radio here. And I feel like just as a pastor, my personal observation is the two most important things we need in our culture right now from the church are courage and truth. And specifically the courage to stand up for the truth.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think this book is so important because, one, I like the fact that you write about how ordinary people standing up for truth can make a huge difference, right? Sometimes we think it's like, oh, if we just had another Billy Graham or Francis Schaeffer or somebody, and just having ordinary people there. But it is a challenge in our culture because we have this individualized ethos that we have this radical individualism and autonomy that has now said, everybody get your own truth. You get your truth, and you get your truth, and you get your truth, and how do we challenge that as we enter into our culture?
Well, I think that's the prime battle of our time. The reason I wrote the book, Truth Changes Everything, is because I went through a time of real crisis with the diagnosis of cancer about the time that I was getting ready to write a book. And of course, you're wondering at that moment, if I don't make it, is this the book that I want to be the last thing I ever get to say? And I realized it was because of the challenge that you're mentioning. There seemed to be two different viewpoints. One, the traditional viewpoint, what I call capital T truth, says that truth exists. We can seek for it and we can find it. It's not always easy. It's a journey. It's a struggle, but you can find it. And then once you know the truth, it's sort of like having a compass out in the wilderness. Once you know which direction magnetic north is, and you've got a map, then you can figure out where to go. Up until that moment, you can't figure out which direction to go. You can't even figure out where you are. But the second view, the radical individualist view that you mentioned, is what I call small t truths. The idea that you don't seek the truth, you speak your truth. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes, you know, sometimes people just say, hey, man, speak your truth. You know, what they mean by that is just give your opinion and give it with a little bit of oomph. But that's not... that is not what has evolved in our culture. We now are to the place where literally a majority of Americans now believe the truth is entirely up to each individual. It's not just that we have different perspectives looking at the same thing. It's that there's no thing there to actually look at.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's presented sometimes in a way that's like, you know, everybody, we're respectful. You have your truth. I have my truth. And we need to honor each other's truths. And like, but even they really don't believe their own lies, because if your truth is, you know, that a man can become a woman, right? That's your truth. And you believe that. My truth says, well, no, I think men are men and women are women. Immediately, the response is going to be, well, you can't say that. That's you're discriminating against that other person. You're hateful towards that other person. In other words, they say, well, this is my truth, but guess what? It's your truth as well, right? If it's not the approved truth, it has to be your truth as well. That I don't think we can escape that idea, even though we're trying to, that there really is an objective truth.
Well, yeah, and the example you brought up is probably the one that bothers our culture the most right now, because people say, without any evidence of any kind, that there is a difference between sex and gender. That your biological sex and your preferred gender may be different things. And if you just look at the parameters of the idea of gender, you're looking at probably 3,000 different possible genders. The truth is there really is no. If gender is something that's entirely inside of your head, it's not something that you can look at. I mean, if you say, I want to go in for surgery, You know, they can't look at anything that might be wrong in your body. They can't do any kind of scans or blood tests for this. It's just entirely your self-perception. So we've actually gotten to the place where this is now not just, hey, just leave people alone, let them live their lives. Mm-hmm. It's actually gotten to the point where it's an attack on reality, Tommy. And I know a lot of people are listening saying, man, come on, just, you know, this is America. We just get to live our own lives. But listen to this. If you can convince little boys and girls that there is no difference between a boy and a girl, you can convince them of anything. Mm-hmm. I am quite sure that we are more ripe for totalitarian ideology than we've ever been, maybe since George Orwell wrote the book 1984, because we have come to believe that each of us gets our own truth. We're not prepared for the possibility that people will come along and say, that's changed. Now our truth is your truth.
Mm. And because we don't have, I mean, if we've abandoned a notion of truth, if we've abandoned this idea that there are some things that are true in the world and not, we really don't have a defense against that, do we?
Your worldview has to be big enough to encompass the truth. So let's, you know, go back to, we always use these examples of cultures that have committed genocide, but there really is something to this. If each of us gets our own truth, then our words are what is true. So the there's no reality out there. It's just our words. And then words become dangerous. My friend Michael Bauman used to say, when words lose their meaning, people lose their lives. Before the Tutsis in Rwanda, or the Hutu in Rwanda slaughtered the Tutsis, they began referring to them publicly as cockroaches. Mm. You can kill your Tutsi neighbor. They're no different than a cockroach. In Nazi Germany, we were the people there called Jews vermin. They were not even human. And what was going on? Well, the German worldview was German nationalism is the most important thing. So whoever is the Führer, the father of the land, is the law, is the most important thing. It was a worldview that was so small that it couldn't encompass things like every human being is born in the image of God, made intentionally in the image of God. And this is what's going on, that people narrow their worldview down to the only things that they can see or perceive or experience. And all of a sudden, these people with very narrow worldviews get into power, impose that narrow worldview on others, and it's a mass slaughter. That's the entire story of the 20th century. And here we go again.
Yeah. And I feel like there's two quotes that come to mind. One, I think, is G.K. Chesterton, who said that, you know, when man stops believing in God, it's not that he'll believe in nothing, but that he'll believe anything, right? That we've abandoned this idea of God, and so we're open to any idea. But then I think Nietzsche took that further and said, well, if God is dead, it's left to us to create meaning, and we do that through the will to power of the strong man. And that's, I think, the point you made, that then we're open for that strongman leader, that totalitarian leader, to come in and say, I am now imposing my truth, and here it is for everybody.
Right, right. Yeah. And Nietzsche's whole point was, we do need courage. We need courage to throw down those who were weak, those mm-hmm. who are powerless, to destroy them so that we can build a society of people who are strong like us. That guy was a madman on a number of levels.
Yeah.
But how does that really differ from some of the messaging that you hear today, mm-hmm. saying that you should cancel every viewpoint that doesn't agree with yours, that you should use your social media influence to destroy the reputation of people you don't agree with? You see, people who have a very narrow worldview generally become extremely angry. So we've got to look back in history somehow, Tommy, and find an example of where people who genuinely understood the truth could genuinely stand for courage in a way that would bless, not curse, in a way that would bring flourishing, not diminishment, to the people of the world.
And that's what you highlight in your book. You talk about people who said, recognize, lived in times, because this isn't, you know, like it says in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. We've been down this road right. before. We're not the first generation of the church to face these kinds of challenges. So you highlight in your book lots of different people who have lived out the truth. And a lot of them, you know, some of them are more well-known. Others I'd never heard of. You know, so it's all kinds of folks. You know, it's not just the famous. It's you know, quiet individual Christians living out their lives, but that can have great power. Why did you, I'm kind of curious about the, I like the fact that you focused a lot in on kind of just ordinary, maybe lesser known folks. Was that an intentional thing, or is that just something you're gathering up, you're researching, and you're finding all these people and saying, oh, I want to highlight this person or that person?
Well, Tommy, this is a book that's, it's kind of biographical. I'm telling stories that I found very compelling of everyday people who believed that Jesus is the truth. And because their worldview was big enough, they were able to transcend that idea that says, well, you know, I'm not much. My truth is my truth, but nobody wants to hear it. So there's nothing that I personally can do to make a difference. That's the number one lie that causes nations to slide into oblivion, because no one person takes responsibility. There never develops a sense of that we all should be taking responsibility. But what if everyday people could break that logjam? That's the point. So I'll just give you an example. We do not live in the worst time in history. I know things are bad. I know things are tough economically. I know the price of groceries is ridiculous. The price of gas goes up and down and fluctuates, and it ruins our budgets, and things seem really awful. We see hypocrisy out of Washington, D.C., which should not surprise us. But you see, I would say if you were to go back to literally the worst time in history, it would be back during the time of the Black Death, the plague. The first time it struck was in the 1300s. A third to half of the people in many European cities died in the most gruesome way imaginable. Nothing like that has ever happened to us. Nothing like that has ever happened to our society, no matter how bad things get. So we could look back at that time and ask, what did Jesus' followers do? And I'll give you a quick example. I was recently in Italy. If you go to the city of Siena, you'll hear a lot about Catherine. She's to people who are Catholic, they consider her to be saint. Saint Catherine has a feast day, in fact, named after her. But she was just a young woman. She was like, you know, her parents had 20 some children, and she was right at the very end. She was just, you know, what influence could she possibly have? But when the plague came, people said, Catherine, you need to get out of town. You need to flee to the country. Everybody who's got money or everybody who has religious influence, we're all fleeing. She said, I'm staying here. I'm going to stay with the sick. Well, why? Because Jesus sits with the suffering, and I want to be with Jesus. She literally just ran to the problem rather than away from it. She wasn't a medical doctor. She didn't know what to do. She could give aid and comfort to people. She could encourage them. She could pray for them. But she just literally made the decision to run toward the problem rather than away from it. The courage of this one young woman inspired what ultimately became the entire medical system to enable the care of the sick that we all take for granted in this world. But it wasn't always there. It happened because of a conscious choice of Catherine, and then ultimately because of, for example, a number of other people to run toward the problem rather than away from it.
And I love the fact that she didn't say, well, you know what, I'm going to stay with the sick, because if I do, people will be inspired and they'll develop this great medical system, and we'll have a system there for caring for people, and we can put it into place, and it's going to be awesome. Right? She just said, I just want to be where Jesus is.
Yeah. She had no idea. She had no idea what results would come from it. And surely there are people in history, Tommy, that aren't in this book, and I don't talk about them because no one knows about them. Mm-hmm. They died, and it did seem that no one ever noticed their sacrifice. But from God's perspective, none of that is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. All of us bear God's image. All of us are made in his likeness. We know this from the very first chapter of the first book of the Bible. It is so basic to understanding a biblical worldview and so foreign to our own culture that it's going to seem revolutionary when everyday people begin living it out.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when we get to heaven, there's going to be people celebrated in heaven we never heard of here on earth. You know, because of their sacrifice, right? I mean, I say all the time, name the guy whose preaching led Billy Graham to get saved. And that's the answer everybody gets. Like, I don't know, you know. But through his preaching, right, how many millions of people heard the gospel because he reached, you know, that? And I think that idea of, because I do think you know, Jeff, I think a lot of times we can look at it just like, this is so big. It's so overwhelming. We're talking about our entire culture. Our entire culture seems to have gone crazy. Our entire culture is, how could we possibly, how could I, one small person, possibly turn that around? And yet we see in these stories, just being faithful to Jesus and being faithful to the truth has real power.
I would say some of the stories that really surprised me were those of the influence of everyday Jesus followers on weird things like politics or justice or science or art. Because you sometimes think, oh, sure, well, medical care, that makes sense. Compassion, that makes sense. But politics? How could a Jesus follower actually make a difference in politics? This thing is so messed up. There's an possible way we could do it. But I went back to a story. This is a true story of Samuel Rutherford. All the stories in the book, by the way, are true. I've documented everything because I know at the very beginning, some scholars were looking at it saying, this is, you know, we need to document all of this because I'm not sure this really happens. We documented every single thing. But Samuel Rutherford was a Scottish pastor, mm-hmm. and he wrote a book called Lex Rex. That's the title of the book. The subtitle is 136 words. I won't recite it for you, but the title Lex Rex means law is king. Up until that moment in time, people believed that the king was the law. Whatever the king decided is what the law should be. And Samuel Rutherford said, no, God exists, and therefore the king must respond to the law. The law, the king is not the law. Well, it sounds fairly simple to us now because we kind of take this for granted. But at the time, the king was outraged. He had recently come back from the English Revolution and was jealous of his power. When Samuel Rutherford wrote this book, the king saw it as a personal attack. He sent his soldiers to go arrest Samuel Rutherford. His plan was to bring him back to London, bring him to Parliament, put him on trial, give him a fair trial, and then hang him. That was his plan. That's exactly what he was going to do. Well, Samuel Rutherford, rather rudely, died before the soldiers arrived.
The effrontery.
And his dying words, his dying words were, I have been summoned by a higher authority. Well, they dug up his body. They burned his bones. They did everything they could to try to stop his message. But the horse was out of the barn, as they say. Just because you're the king does not mean you get to decide what is right and what is wrong. And that became the basis of writings that influenced the founders of the United States of America. Samuel Rutherford and a similar message in books written by a guy named John Locke. Caused them to go back and look at scriptural principles about the idea of a Hebrew republic. And because the founders of the United States of America were largely men of faith, 51, possibly three of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence were members of Christian churches. That doesn't, obviously being a member of a church doesn't mean you're a Christian, but it does tend to influence where you go to get your sorts of information for the difficult decisions you have to make. And the rest, as they say, is history. Started with a little Scottish pastor who wrote a book that was six letters, the title of which was six letters long.
I'm a little disappointed that your subtitle is not 136 words, but, you know, we'll let that go.
Publishers today sort of frown on
they
that.
They kind of frown, thing. Yeah. They don't, not big on it. And, but that's a great example, and that's what you do. You talk about, obviously, here's politics, but you also talk about how we learn, how we grow, science, the arts. You have a chapter on the arts. You have a chapter on justice, how change how we work. I don't think people ever think about that, the value of work and how we work. So in all these different areas, you kind of highlight and you bring forth people, and some people will recognize, some people will not, and you'll get to learn about some new folks. And you show how, like William Rutherford, just by being faithful, made a big impact and changed. Because, you know, when we put that out there, you know, God is taking it, right? God is building that. You know, it's not really us. If we live for truth, God will build on that.
You know, Tommy, one thing I've heard from social scientists, and I've looked into this, and I think it's, roughly speaking, it's true. You don't need 100% of people to agree with something to have an influence. You probably only need 10, possibly 15%. So you're never trying to get to the place where you say, well, if there was a majority viewpoint for what I believe, then we could make a difference. There never will be. It's been said that, well, can one person make a difference? Well, that's the only way anything has ever happened. Someone decided to be the one who would, if necessary, stand alone. And then occasionally someone else would stand and someone else would stand. And the result wasn't hugely different. Why am I making such a big deal out of this? Because we've done a lot of polling at Summit Ministries and found that 2/3 of Americans are basically on track. They believe in truth. They believe in morality. They believe that they need to take personal responsibility. And so why don't they ever make a difference? Well, we dug into it a little bit. We found out that of the people who believe there is such a thing as truth, who believe that they need to work hard and raise good families, you know, all the things that make a country great, half of them say they don't ever say anything so as not to offend anyone.
Well, that's where that courage comes in, right?
Right. We have a desire to be nice, and that desire to be nice is now at war with our responsibility to future generations. So we're at some point going to have to make a choice. And the choice is not to be a jerk or not to be a jerk.
Yeah.
The choice is whether to speak the truth the way God tells us to speak the truth. If you're wondering how God tells us to speak the truth, just go back to 2 Timothy chapter 2. I recently visited Mamertine Prison, where the Apostle Paul is thought to have been held when he was a prisoner in Rome. It's basically a cave. My wife and I were the only ones there. We were down in that cave thinking of what he wrote in 2 Timothy. Was he under persecution? Yes. Was he under stress? Yes. Had he suffered? Without question. But what did he say? The Lord's servant must not quarrel. Rather, he ought to be gentle to everyone, able to teach and patient, instructing his opponent with gentleness. Perhaps God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth. Then they may come to their senses and escape the trap of the devil who has taken them captive to do his will. He's writing this from a prison cell. He is the one I look back at and say, okay, I get it. Even when you're under persecution, even when people are threatening you, you still gently instruct. Why? In the hope that God will grant them repentance. You're not the one who's locked them in the prison. You're the one who has a chance to set them free. And how are you going to do it? Through gentle instruction that's patient.
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Myers. The book is Truth Changes Everything, How People of Faith Can Transform the World in Times of Crisis. And Dr. Myers, we've had a half hour. I feel like we just barely scratched the surface of it, you know, but it's a great book. Tell people, if folks want to find out more information about the book, about Summit Ministries, how can they do so?
Well, if you just Google Truth Changes Everything, you'll find that you can buy it from your favorite retailer, wherever you get books, best place to buy it. You can get it from Amazon, Noble, Target, you know, all of those different places. You can also check out Summit Ministries. Now, I'm the president of this organization in Colorado, the goal of which is to prepare the rising generation to embrace God's truth and champion a biblical worldview. And we do that through 2-week-long courses where young adults, 16 to 22 years of age, come together from all over the world. They converge here in Colorado and also at a location in Lookout Mountain, Georgia. And in those programs, we bring them together with top Christian thought leaders who love Jesus, but who are the top in business, economics, in apologetics, philosophy, all these different areas where students have big questions. They learn how to become leaders. And it's unreal, the change that takes place. You know, that 4% of this rising generation has a biblical worldview. By the time they leave Summit, 85% have a biblical worldview. They experience radical life transformation because it changes the trajectory of their lives. So I'd love for people to check out that program. Right now, folks, I think, are looking at what they might want to do this summer. That 2-week program could be something that could change the whole course of life for the young adults you love.
Very
cool. Just go to summit.org.
Summit.org. Dr. Myers, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. It's been great talking with you this morning.
Really enjoyed the conversation. And thanks, Tommy, for what y'all do.